my first guest, who is the director of the Auckland Writers Festival. She has been for a few years now, and I think this might be her last in that stint, but she might be able to tell me if I haven't put my foot in it. Kia ora, Anne.
Kia ora, Brian. How are you?
I'm fine. Anne O'Brien, director of the Auckland Writers Festival. How long have you been on the at the helm, Anne?
It's just coming up for 11 years, Brian, and yes, the rumour is correct. I'm trying to extricate myself. It's hard to do. It's something I love, but it's all-consuming, as you can imagine, and I just want to get a little bit more kind of flexibility in my day. So it's time to hand over the reins and move on, hopefully, to other things. But in the meantime, a festival to be delivered in 2 weeks.
I'll ask you more about that later, but first off, what is your concept of a writer's festival? What's the point of a writer's festival?
Well, it's got two layers. I mean, the core concept is to get more people engaged with great books, with great writing, and particularly with this festival, which was started by two New Zealand writers, about engaging more New Zealanders with more great New Zealand work. So that's the first thing. We're a showcase, really, a platform, if you like, for some of the great fiction, non-fiction, poetry, performance. It's all built around the beauty of language across the year. But the second thing is that it really does provide an opportunity for people to gather together in public space in the same way that you would with performance art, and as a community, kind of explore story, who you are in the world, who we are to each other, learn about someone else's story, someone else's experience, and expand your worldview. So there's this kind of really beautiful engagement that happens while we're showcasing some really great books.
Is this the first time you've all been back together in the same room since the beginning of the pandemic?
No, we did have to cancel in 2020, and we went online and created a little 13-part salon series, three writers a week. In 2021, we did deliver a live program, actually. We got away with that. Of course, borders were closed. The Auckland Writers Festival traditionally has had about 40 to 45 international writers alongside about 180 to 200 New Zealanders. Last year, we didn't manage that, although there are a few people. We found Neil Gaiman lurking on Waiheke Island, so we managed to pop in into the program. So we had a great outing last year, 6 days, attendance of 65,000. This year, we were working on that same concept, a little bit of digital content just to bring in those international voices. And then, of course, the borders opened as we deferred. So we've, as a one-off, we moved from our usual spot in May through to August just to avoid the first Omicron surge. And then the borders opened, so we've managed to just add to what was a really rich sort of tapestry already, a few visiting internationals, three or four, A.C. Grayling, Marsha Gessen, direct from Europe, the Ukraine and Georgia, Clementine Ford, fiery feminist from Australia, so Leanne Moriarty. So a few people, and then a whole beautiful bunch of New Zealand writers and storytellers and musicians, and a little bit of digital content, people like David Duchovny of X-Files fame and Rebecca Solnit, the essayist, just to kind of keep up that conversation. And then next year we'll work back towards a full live iteration and get everyone on stage in real time.
Writers from both Ukraine and Georgia, Anne.
Well, Masha, no. So Masha Gessen is Russian, actually now based in New York, a journalist, but has just spent over the last 10 weeks a month in Ukraine and a month in Georgia. Famously, was here actually in about 2016, first wrote a book about the many faces of Vladimir Putin. Not a fan, I have to say. And then since then has written books on Pussy Riot, on totalitarianism and autocracy. So they are travelling a bit in Europe doing reporting and then coming, landing on the stage here in Auckland to really kind of engage with us about what's going on out there, what it's like on the ground and the current tensions that the world is facing in that region.
Because in a way, now, okay, this is maybe a generalist, very generalistic thing to say, but you could argue that something like a writer's festival in a country like New Zealand is the very antithesis of the sort of cultural gathering you might have in an authoritarian state like Russia or China.
Agreed. And I think the thing is that this is an opportunity. I mean, we are really lucky to be able to engage in this level of public discourse. And I think there are very few places left even in the free world where that actually happens, or free world is a wild phrase, but where that actually happens. Public broadcasting is one of them, Brian. You and I know public broadcasting well and love it. And writers' festivals are another. This is an opportunity. And one of the things I do try to do, obviously fiction, in the fiction and poetry space, it's a little bit different, but certainly in the non-fiction area, which is a strong part of the program, I want to make sure that we're not just speaking to ourselves, and I want to make sure that the voices we're bringing to the stage reflect a range of points of view, because A, I think that's important for each of us, you know, not just to be in an echo chamber, and B, I don't know how you kind of advance your thinking about what it is to be in the world and where the social contracts sit unless you're actually challenged about what you already think. And so, for instance, one of my classics is we are having a conversation about wealth and equity. It's come out of Max Rashbrook's book about how wealth is concentrated in the 1% in New Zealand. But Neville Gibson, who writes the National Business Review, did a review in which he said this is a fruitless exercise. And actually, you know, the book's thesis he doesn't really subscribe to. And so what better thing to do than to put them both on stage together with Hinemoa Elder, we've added into the mix, to actually explore and challenge each other and the audience about how we see the world and how we kind of understand our experience of it.
Is Hinemoa Elder the mediator or another participant in the tripartite talk?
No, the mediator is, she's another participant. I wanted to make sure we had a range of voices. I mean, she's obviously working in the area of psychiatry, but she's working with communities at the coalface. And she's also a Māori voice. I think it's really important when we talk about many of the kind of issues that we face in New Zealand that the Māori voice is in the conversation. The moderator for that is actually Tove O'Brien, who's volunteered to put her hand up and try and keep things on track. So we'll see how we go.
You're going to be remembering Kerry Hume, aren't you?
We are. We actually famously had Kerry Hume at the festival about 5 years ago. We were doing a celebration of the Bone People, and I organised for her to come. She was meant to be travelling with a film crew, but then she managed to lose them. And then she managed not get on the ferry or stay in the motel where she was meant to be picked. And it was quite a drama. She didn't fly. So we had this huge... Anyway, she did come, and it was amazing. It was this huge kind of gathering of people for whom the Bone People had been this extraordinary piece of work. And, you know, people wept and shared stories. It was really moving. But obviously we lost her. There are others too. We lost Stephen Sondheim. We lost Moana Jackson. And we are paying tribute. So with Kerry, we're playing Gaylene Preston's film, Kai Pirako, which was actually made in the 1980s. Cinematography was by Leon Narby. It was just after she'd won the Booker. And, of course, she's very eccentric, Kerry. And so once a day in the square on a digital screen, free to view, we're going to play that documentary. We're going to pay tribute to Stephen Sondheim with an hour of performance and singing and memories of him, and talk about why he was so important. And Ani Makaere is part of Moana Meneapoto's curatorial program. So she's curated a series of sessions for us. It's going to pay tribute to Moana Jackson, who was due to be at the festival this year, but obviously sadly died. And so we want to just take a moment to really mark the immense contribution he made to the landscape of Aotearoa.
I'm interested, Stephen Sondheim, a songwriter, and I hadn't obviously thought of that initially in terms of a writer's festival, but songs still get to be written, don't they? Or have to be written. You don't. You need to write the lyrics, or it's just humming along.
That's right. I mean, I always say a couple of things. So first of all, I always think that poetry always must be in a festival because, of course, it's the essence of the craft of language, refining an idea down to its most kind of, you know, pared back form. And songwriting is a form of that. And what we've tried to do in the festival, I mean, we have a lot of beautiful fiction and nonfiction and memoir, but I also want us to range around different ways of finding how language is used to tell a story. And songwriting is obviously a really important one. And with the genius of Sondheim, you know, we've talked to James Lepine. He's filmed a little tribute to talk to us about what working with Stephen Sondheim over many, many years meant to him. And then we've got a variety of people like Jennifer Wood Leland and Edward Lawrenson performing some songs. So, yeah, that is text, that is language, that is a form of writing. We're celebrating writing in its all its forms. In the same way as we've got some theatre pieces, we've got a Sydney Art Quartet, which juxtaposes small pieces from Haydn and Schubert, Charpentier and Janáček, with readings from Rose Tremain's Music in Silence, Vikram Seth's An Unequal Music, and Tolstoy's The Kreutzer Sonata. So there we go, another beautiful pairing of
is that happening
music.
Right? Have you given up that for talking with me, Anne, because isn't that on right now at the Auckland Town Hall?
No, it's on. I got my dates way out of whack.
That's on the 22nd of Auckland. It's tonight. Today's the 8th.
That's right. Day one of the festival. That's our first outing with Sydney Art Quartet. They're doing two performances, and then we've arranged for them to go to Arrowtown, and they're doing a third performance down there. So they're some of the people we've inveigled from across the Tasman. No, I can promise you, Brian, although I love talking to you, that I don't think on that day I'll be on the radio. I think I'll be running around trying to pull everything together.
Tell me about the venues. So we've just mentioned one, the Auckland Town Hall. Is that where everything's going to happen?
Pretty much everything happens in the Aotea Centre in Auckland, actually, Aotea Centre. So the Town Hall is a sort of a satellite. So it's a beautiful venue. It's actually the, it makes a lot of festival directors around the world very jealous, our venue, because we're using all five rooms in the venue. So we've got a big auditorium and then a 400 and a 300 seater, 200 seater and the Herald Theatre. And we program so that most sessions last an hour and they all start and finish at the same time. And then everyone pours out into the hallways where we've got books being sold and writers signing books and friends meeting and people queuing and coming and going. And we sort of create this amazing kind of, you know, streets of New York community city within the environs. And then we've got a few things. So we've got some things happening in the square. Puka Puka Adventures, which is our free family day on Sundays in the Town Hall. Sydney Art Quartet is in the Town Hall. But we're all in that sort of precinct in that square because there's an energy that comes from the gathering, from being all together, that we really want to hold on to. It's because it's where the magic happens.
What about going beyond the square to schools or bringing young people in to the festival?
Well, we do, because we want the community to come together rather than going out. I mean, there is a practical reason why we don't do that too, which would just require a lot of time and staff that we don't have. We actually do bring students in. So the first, it's a 6-day festival. This year we snuck it into 7. The first 3 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, are primarily schools days. So around about 6,000 students we're anticipating will come in to the festival. We help by supporting bus travel. For a lot of those schools, we sponsor a lot of lower decile schools. So, yes, they come in. Those students come in school classes. They attend 4 sessions across the day. So they have 4 writers in 45-minute slots who kind of talk to them about their work, excite them about reading, sometimes excite them about writing. They sign books in the lobby, in the breaks. And it really is that trigger point for keeping that next generation engaged with what books can do, which is just bring this extraordinary range of experiences and entertainments to you. So, yeah, that's a really big and important part of our program. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we go into public programming, which is a mixture of free sessions and ticketed sessions at relatively accessible price points. But that younger generation, we want people to start reading when they're really little. We want them to keep reading, and we want them to read all the way through their lives.
When you began as director of the festival, did you expect you would stay with it as long as you have, Anne?
No, well, famously, Brian, for most parts of my life, I've done a job for no more than about 4 years, because I'm very kind of project and sort of momentum based, and I like to get in and make some stuff happen and set it on its way and move on. But of course, with a festival, every year has its own shape and its own heart and its own, you know, the guests sort of change the conversations, what's happening in the world change the kind of things you program. And so each year there is this beautiful originality to what you do. So I've stayed and loved that. There are also a lot of things. I'm both the artistic director and the CEO, and we need to raise over $1 million every single year to put the program on. You know, there's a whole variety of grants and fundraising and just logistical stuff that doesn't change year to year. And those are the things that I'm sort of looking forward to giving up.
You're listening to Nights on RNZ National. I'm speaking to Anne O'Brien, who is the director of the Auckland Writers' Festival, for one final time. Did I get it right here, right, that Clementine Ford is one of your overseas guests this year?
Yep, Clementine Ford. And we've done this really, well, I think, we've done this nice Wednesday evening thing. So it's early in the week. So Monday, Tuesday, we've got Sondheim and the Art and Power. We've also got some plays starting. And then Wednesday at 6:30, we've got A.C. Grayling, the great English philosopher, with his latest book, which is called For the Good of the World. And it asks the question about how we might set aside our differences across the political spectrum to actually rise to the challenges of the moment, technology, climate change, and so forth. So he's 6:30 to 7:45. And then you've got a half hour break. And then here's a new generation of thinkers and people who are inspiring us to think about it differently. So Clementine Ford, then from 8:15 through to 9:30, in conversation with Madeleine Chapman, actually, we'll be talking about her life and work. Her latest book is a memoir called How We Love. But obviously she's the author of Fight Like a Girl and Boys Will Be Boys. And she's been a really kind of strident and passionate voice for girls and for women and for against toxic masculinity. So double bill. You can choose the wonderful English philosopher, and no one talks, gives a lecture like A.C. Grayling's just such a fantastic speaker. Or you can choose Clementine, or you know what? You can do both. Grab a drink in the middle and something to eat and, just kind of really inspire your thinking about the world just over a little couple of hours one evening.
I can't imagine that the reverberations from the US Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe versus Wade won't have moved through the global writing community.
No, well, actually, and the person that we have programmed it was before that. I mean, obviously, people like Clementine will have much to say about that, and there'll be a host of others. I think Sue Orr, who wrote a novel, Loop Tracks, which actually takes a starting place, the experience of women who went on a plane from New Zealand to Sydney to get abortions in the 70s. But one of my heart sessions this year, and as I say, programmed before Roe versus Wade, is Margaret Sparrow, the extraordinary Margaret Sparrow, who was a doctor at the university when I was a university student, which is a long time ago at Victoria, who's spent a lifetime fighting for reproductive rights, and she's coming to Auckland. She'll be on stage with Catherine Robertson. Catherine Robertson wrote an essay about a New Zealander she admired. She chose Margaret Sparrow, and she starts that essay by talking about her own experience as a young woman of having a termination. And so we're going to get Margaret Sparrow, who's just gorgeous, beautiful to deal with, on stage talking about her life's work. So those are the kind of conversations, as you say, you know, the world shifts and changes all the time, and these things reverberate. And the beautiful thing about 170 events in a festival is you can play around in all sorts of spaces. You can play in those serious political challenge spaces. You can go to beautiful fantasy, you know, Elizabeth Knox and Lee Murray. You can, you know, we can talk about hip hop and spoken word. We can just, you know, Pax Asades in a session for Rosabelle Tan. There's just a million ways in which you can kind of come into the room and find your own place and what's preoccupying you, or you need distraction or you need engagement. The festival can give you both.
And I sometimes wonder about the English language. And by that I mean that because I can only speak English, if I could speak lots of other languages, it'd be different. But there you go. I'm not unusual in terms of being a Pākehā New Zealander who can only speak English. But sometimes I kind of wonder about the quality of thought that comes to us via the English language, especially maybe on social media. I'm thinking about some of the examples set by leaders of the English-speaking world recently. They may not be in power anymore, like Donald Trump or Boris Johnson. They're rather selfish conservatism. I mean, I can relate to conservatism in some ways, but their selfishness I can't. And then you've got ScoMo, and you kind of wonder whether sometimes I think we're a bit culturally blinkered because we can only speak English, most of us.
I mean, that's an interesting question, whether that's the texture of language which limits us in that way. I am also monolingual, Brian, so I have no claim. A little bit of schoolgirl French and a little bit of Te Reo Māori in the office is about my limit. But potentially, I'm not sure. I think, you know, I went to a film about Leonard Cohen in the film festival yesterday, day before, Hallelujah, fantastic film. I think it's sold out, so I'm not sure anyone can get tickets. And I just thought, you know, one of the wonderful things, and I'm a big Leonard Cohen fan, we've done a session about Leonard in the past. One of the things about Leonard is his beautiful facility with the English language. So he speaks in this really profound and quite resonant way.
Yes.
And you think, wow, that is what the language can do. And we have writers who can do that. I mean, I often think that about Noel McCarthy, actually. You know, she has, and I know she's Irish, and I always think the Irish have are kind of educated to have this great sort of facility with language. So I think the language has got sort of the permission within it. I'm not sure we use it all that well, but I also think, and I don't know where, you know, what this means in the end, but it's kind of important to see people using it in that shallow way, because if we sort of turn aside from that, we don't recognize how easy it is to reduce everything to a ridiculous, you know, 4-word, 140 character, whatever it is, statement. And we need to, and we need that to actually challenge ourselves to continue to actually believe in, advocate for, champion the use of the language and proper kind of engagement with complicated things. And so I think, you know, at least it presents us with that sort of immediate challenge to say, I don't want to be that. But there are just people who can use the language beautifully. And it's, I mean, the craft of a writer, of course, is to sit and to work and to work and to work at that, to find how you replicate experience by using a bunch of words, a bunch of symbols on a page. And that is the marvel of when a great novel is created, or a great poem, or a great piece of work, is that somebody has actually hit a magic spot and used the language in a way that really articulates truth and brings pleasure and tells us something new, or tells us, resonate, you know, it tells us what our experience is. And so you recognize yourself in someone else's used language. So I'm going to be optimistic about that. I'm going to hold on to the fact that it can do what we need it to do.
Anne, and what are you going to do after this festival?
Well, I'm not sure. After, I hope that people will bring me projects and things that I can get stuck into. I'm not kind of disappearing. I just need a little bit more flexibility. So it's a kind of open path, and that's both incredibly frightening but also really exciting. So I will let you know once I get to the other side how that looks.
I'm sure we'll hear from you, Anne.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks so much for joining us, and all the best for this year's festival.
Kia ora.
Kia ora, Am. That's Anne O'Brien, director of the Auckland Writers' Festival, which begins 2 weeks from today, not today, August 22nd. And it's the last time that Anne, at least that's what she's saying, it's the last time she'll be the festival's director, unless they can change her mind, of course.